think it's important just to point your compass towards joy.
And play like you, be like you, and don't overthink it.
Well, cheeks.
Duh. Yeah, we recording?
Oh, bro. Yeah, we're good. How's your heart rate,
yeah,
bro?
Flipping high, man.
Woo.
Yeah, hi.
We got a batch of drummers here.
Yeah, thank you all for coming, man. This is pretty crazy. Yeah.
This is absolutely amazing. You know, it's weird. I don't know why, but when we did this in the UK, and it was so incredibly beautiful, and the people that came, it was just amazing, and every night was truly touching. And then when he said, when I come over, we should do it there, and I was like, oh man, you know, Americans, it's not, I don't know if it's going to be the same, man. Like, I don't know if it's going to be the same. And I just didn't want to, like, you know.
And weirdly, I was like, yeah, fair point.
I was like, I don't know, man. And then, you know, honestly, one of the big driving forces for doing this, as weird as this may sound, was sociology. The, you know, what Kyle has built here, when you walk into there, whatever ego you had out there kind of just calms down. There's beautiful tunes on. There's people with smiling faces to meet you and greet you and not make you feel stupid for ordering matcha when you've never ordered it in your life. And they just say, we got you, you know? And I was like, well, if we did it there, I think this could work. So big, big hand of applause for Kyle and everybody at Sociology.
Hiding behind the door.
Hey, stop hiding. Come here. Come here, you little biscuit. I know you're out there. There he is. There he is. Come on. To Tyler, to Lindsay, to everyone that works here, that takes care of, if you've been to drum camp, you know how amazing the entire staff is. Everyone that works here is super cool. And I do also want to point out, their air conditioning is on point. This is not their business, so it's not their fault that it's 1,000 degrees in here. They did their job, so they're crushing it. But when we, you know, when we knew that, like, it was going to be here, we just thought, like, this can totally work. And just seeing what just happened, it was like, yeah, man, this is why we do this. So thanks for coming out. All right. You ready to get into podcast mode?
I think so. I'm still not used to the podcast in front of 30 people. I've got to be honest with you. It's a bit odd, but I like it.
I'm still not used to making eye contact with you.
I'm going to look at David the whole time. Yeah, I think you're my anchor.
All right. I'm going to go with Carlos. He's just handsome as all hell. He's eating a cookie. Yeah. I'm just going to stare at him. Yeah. We got our guys.
We got our guys.
When you played live, did you ever just find that one person in the crowd that just kind of was having the time of their life? And you're like, okay, if I'm having a rough go, that kid's having the time of his life. I'm going to focus in on him. Or did you just look for chicks?
There was none at our gigs, mate.
Yeah.
There was no chicks at our show.
I think our genre, like, should have been called boy band, because boys are the only ones that came to our shows. So
it's like when the wife or the missus says, I'm a little bit nervous about you going on tour. And I was like, you should see the lads there, mate. You have nothing to worry about.
The only thing less to worry about is a drum clinic.
Yeah, exactly. That's the worst.
I tell Amber, the dudes can't even get their wives to come. So you got nothing to worry about. Yeah, but exactly. Now we've got a crop of amazing female drummers. So it's getting more spread out. And that's a good thing.
But, mate, when I used to play live, well, when I still do, I look, nothing gets me more pumped than when other drummers from the other bands come and watch.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
I always look for, like, the support act or even the main act. I mean, mate, not to drop a name.
Do it.
But I'm going to do it. That was when we toured with Blink, and the second show, my tech was like sort of nudging me down by the waist, and I was like, what's going on? What's wrong? And then I turned around to him while I was playing, and he was sort of going like that. And then Travis was standing there.
Wow.
That was like, I love it when that happens, mate. It's like the audience, you can't really, like, latch onto them, especially if it's dark, but if a drummer comes watch, it comes to watch, that's for me, that's like, yes. It's like the same at a clinic.
At a clinic, though, I find the one guy that, even though he doesn't understand anything, he's like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, that's my guy. No matter how bad this moment is going, he's in. So, this was really cool to get started, hear everybody play. Dude, legit cats.
Mate, amazing.
That was pretty awesome. Yeah. I wish we would have had the live BPM app out. I think they stayed in the same tempo the whole time.
Yeah, they did. And then when I got up there, I was like, straight up.
We did snort some matcha downstairs right before we got here. So
just about to do a podcast in front of 30 people. Straight up.
Let's get some lines of matcha going. All right. Well, let's get into our main topic before we do any Q&A with the crowd. So you and I talked behind the scenes a lot about how many drummers are out there doing it, making a living, signed bands, touring, all that stuff, but maybe just don't get the recognition they deserve, or maybe they're not household names. And especially when you're dealing with cats that are in bands and these guys and girls are too busy to do social media. So they don't really care. It's like, man,
they're just too cool and they just like, in a good way, they're just like, I don't care.
Yeah, they're not worried about social media because they're busy playing arenas or working in the studios or whatever. So we each were given the assignment to pick two drummers that the world should know more about.
Yeah.
You want to kick it off?
Yeah. All right. So one of the guys that I'm picking, he's called Ben Johnson and he plays in a band called Biffy Clyro. I'm sure some people here have heard of Biffy Clyro.
Okay. But how many of you know who Ben Johnston is? Because he has the same last name as me. I love Biffy Clyro and I had no idea what the drummer from Biffy Clyro's name is. That's the point of this, is bringing light to those people where it's like, oh, I love this band. Who's their drummer? No idea. It's like, all right, well, let's find out who they are.
He's amazing, man. Like that band, if you've never heard of that band, I'll try to describe them the best way I can. They blend like really difficult, complex, technical parts into just songs that can be played on the radio, in arenas. They headline festivals in the UK and Europe. They're a massive band, but they're a musician's band as well, which is very rare. That's really hard to do, to blend technical parts, odd timings, and put that into sort of pop rock, but still be cool and credible. And, you know, so it's really difficult to do. And not only to do that, but like to make technical drum parts fit into songs that are played on the radio is even harder.
Yeah, for sure.
And this guy does it so easy. And I love watching him play, mate. He's an absolute demon. And he uses the ride more than anyone else I've ever met in my whole entire life.
Now, you mean the top of the ride.
The pinger. He is tip of the stick on the bell.
Top of the ride.
It doesn't happen anymore, mate. It doesn't. It's crash ride or it's crash or it's open hats. And he's a ride guy. And so if you've never heard of Biffy Clyro, definitely check them out. They're amazing. They're from Scotland. And this song, just listen.
Okay.
This is the intro to an album, and sometimes I think they open the set with this, and it's unbelievable.
So real quick, and this is for everyone listening at home as well, we talked a lot about this week during our camp, about how we want people to get better at listening, learning how to listen, learning how to be okay and not be too cool to close your eyes and just use your ears and try to think about, how is this recorded? Is it close mics? Is it just overheads? Is it just room mics? Listen to really what's going on. So when we play you these tracks, just know one, these tracks are really, you know, they shaped us as people. Let's use this as a great chance to just listen to some music together and just be engaged in the listening process.
To feel like I'm lying here, swimming in memories. I fear God because everything I've made got a
gun in the back of my car. A spasm of good sense is making my eyes
wet. Break that out.
Let's give it up for Fade Out.
Thank you, guys. I can't play the song, but I can fade it out pretty well. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, that's their intro to, I think it's their self-titled album. I don't know if it is, but the song's called Living is a Problem Because Everything Dies. And it, mate, it's just an absolute banger. That's the intro to their album. But yeah, like I said, man, they blend really technical parts like that. That's hard to do. And apparently, I might be wrong, but the rumor is that that's Morse code for something. Scottish Morse code. Hence why it's really sort of sporadic and crazy, but that might be untrue. I might slide in Ben's DMs, the drummer, and get him on the
we
podcast
should find
to explain.
Because if it was at that tempo, it would take forever to get the message.
Yeah, that
someone on the other end is like, "Dog, spit it out." Today, Junior, let's go.
But yeah, that's they're amazing, man. And Ben's, he's a wicked drummer, and I don't know the guy, but. Because you assume that, like, if someone doesn't post videos of them playing drums, you assume they don't know that they're good or at a good standard. Do you know what I mean? But sometimes totally. People just don't care, and I love that. But yeah, he's great.
He's cool. After really digging into his playing, I would definitely put him up there with the great drum part writers. He writes amazing drum parts. You know, that song, Wolves of Winter.
Yeah, it's a banger.
That's like one of my favorite songs of all time. And I feel like Ben has a lot of Ringo Starr in him where he puts it out to the world and it's like, easy, got it. And then you sit down and try to do it and you're like, why can't I play this? Why is this so difficult? And it just, these people write amazing drum parts and the songs wouldn't be the same without them. So hopefully we can get Ben on next week or the week after and he can tell us whether that was slow motion Morse code.
Oh, no. The first thing he's going to say is, no, who told you that? I'm going to go, no worries, mate. Just broadcasted it to 30 people in a podcast. It's all good.
All right, you ready?
I think so. Who are you going for?
I'm trying to think after that. I want to keep the energy up.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Connor Rain. Does anybody know who Connor Rain is? I would expect there to be no one raising their hand because I didn't know who he was, even though he's the drummer in one of my all-time favorite bands. So the band is called Brass Tracks, and it's a duo. It's trumpet and drums. That's the whole band. But they're both producers, so the songs get filled out with bass. They hire musicians for everything else. But as far as what they write, it's just trumpet and bass. But it's very horn-centric, and so there's just this vibe of like modern R&B, modern funk, modern soul, but very trumpet driven or brass driven, trombone as well. And it's just incredible. And then they constantly bring in singers and stuff. And Connor, he's kind of similar to Ben Johnston where he just has a thing. He does not care how many drummers like him. He's not trying to impress anybody. He just wants to make the song groove. But it's weird, man. He's not like a funk drummer, pure funk like Adam Deitch. He's not a pure trip hop and drum and bass drummer like Richard Spavin. He has his own thing and he loves beats. And man, if you hear a tom in one of their songs, count yourself lucky because that dude hits a tom once an album. It's kick, snare, and hats, and maybe a crash. So I don't even know what song I chose. I think this is called Basket Case.
Yeah.
And like you're not going to hear him throwing heat. He's just making songs feel good. So yeah, let's check it out.
I'm checking back with you about the new album. I gave it a listen, and I gotta tell you, it seems like you're going against the grain. And just remember that
original never wins out.
And then we'll go into.
Another great fade out by Eddie Thrower.
Thank you.
We got a fade out guy. So Connor Rain, just unsung hero, man. Like that guy, just there's probably 5 albums now, full albums from Brass Tracks. So they've been doing it for a while. And I've always loved the band. And I kind of knew that it, because every time you see a video of them live, the whole band is different, but the trumpet player and the drummer are always the same. And I just, it didn't click to me that it was a 2-piece band until I did my research literally for this podcast. Because like, I don't even know who plays drums. I went to his Instagram page. My man does not care about social media. I think he posted once when they launched Instagram. And he's like, yeah, it's not for me. I'm going to go play some drums. And I love that. It's
so
the same.
Do I.
Same with like, you know, Ben Johnston, like these people, like they just do their job. And yeah. So if you guys want some good, good music to jam to, Brass Tracks, it's the way to go.
It's listening to that sort of music. Like it makes me want to get in a band with, well, just completely rip that off essentially, but like getting a band with like a horn section and just like playing a bar, playing a club,
yeah,
and just improvise.
Yeah,
because I'm not a drum solo guy. I just can't, not that I can't do it, I just don't want to do them. It doesn't like get it, it doesn't do anything for me. And that's like my form of soloing.
Yeah, totally.
Improv, just yeah, like improv with music. And yeah, it's not about how technical it is, it's about how catchy it is.
Yeah, having a vamp, you know, just like, okay, this is our 8-bar phrase and we're just going to loop this and then everyone can just kind of improvise around in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that stuff is just awesome. And I think that we're so lucky that, you know, so many different genres will come in and out. I'm sure most people here are old enough to remember ska coming in really hard and being this massive thing. It was truly amazing because for once, all of my friends from school band were like, I'm cool now. And I'm like, you're super cool. Yeah. Yeah. You're like a guitarist or a drummer now, even though, you know, you play trombone, you're in. And then ska kind of, you know, then became its own thing. But I think because of social media and bands like Snarky Puppy bringing very, very amazing instrumental music to the masses, but doing it in a cool way, in that sneaky way, kind of like what you're talking about with Biffy Clyro, like how do you appease the drummers?
Yeah.
And the non-drummers at the exact same time. And yeah, that's so rare. You know, Dave Matthews Band did it. Tool did it. Rush did it. But it's really rare that Sting did it. Something gets on the radio where the drummer and the non-drummer are equally as stoked about the tune.
Yeah.
And I feel like Brass Tracks is like that. The musicians can be like, damn, this is grooving. And then non-musicians can just dance to it and have fun and not overthink it.
Yeah. So my next guy is the complete opposite.
Sweet. Should have talked about this beforehand.
Has anyone heard the band Turnstile? Yeah. Quite a lot of heads.
Attaboy.
Yeah. So Turnstile are like hardcore band, rock and roll band, rock band. The drummer's called Dan Fang. I can never get his last name right, mate. I don't know why. It's just in my head now. It's like when you can't get the ending of a song. But yeah, Dan is... He's an amazing drummer. And what I like about Turnstile is that I don't think there's any click live. And that's what I kind of like about it. I think in 2022, a lot of bands, most bands play to click. Everything's mapped out. And to be in a band like this and not play to click, it's tough to get up there and to play at like velocity 10 from the get go. And to do that for an hour is really, really hard. And like, you know, if you're playing in a bar or in this situation, you're playing quieter. That's difficult, but playing hard for an hour and being consistent and getting everything note for note is just as difficult. And this guy makes it look easy, man. And Turnstile for me, yet again, regarding social media, they don't care. Right. They sell out massive venues. They'll put like a cool picture up of like a Jordan and a bit of a guitar. They won't even take a picture of the crowd. I'm like, yes, boys, love that. But yeah, they're a really cool band, really credible. So yeah, check it out. This song's called Don't Play. I think this one comes in hot. So it's fun.
Solid.
So good. But yeah, because that's what I used to play similar music when I first started playing drums, just punk rock, straight up punk rock. And what I always found difficult was like trying to get at level 10 in the first song.
Yeah.
It's near impossible. Like by the time you finish the set, you're like, oh, I wish that now, you know, I wish we could go again.
Yeah, I wish you could do 3 songs backstage.
Yeah, exactly.
Then go out on the stage.
So, I've watched him live quite a few times, and he's just note for note perfect, mate. And I think like playing that music is just a lot harder than most people think. I think people just think, oh, you just hit hard and just rock out, but to be consistent and tight, it's difficult, man.
It's funny when you first introduced me to them. I think it was on our last podcast where we were just on one of our drives, and I thought that they were way older. I thought they were a band from maybe like the 90s or the early 2000s that are now back. They remind me a lot of Refused. Faith No More with Snapcase and Earth Crisis, like hardcore influences, but with like a punk rock vibe. Mm-hmm. And then you show me their picture and they're like 12.
They're literally like 12 years old.
Yeah. Because I looked up Dan Fang first and I was like, is he sitting in for the 52-year-old drummer? He's a kid, man.
I mean, mate.
You know, they're probably in their 20s, I would assume.
Yeah, literally, yeah. Yeah, in
that. But it's so cool. Like, I love that vibe, just that kind of hardcore / punk rock vibe. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's great, man. You got to check him out. Turnstile.
Dan Amazing. Fang. All right. Our fourth and final drummer. You know what? I'm not texting. I do want to pull up his Wikipedia page because I told
this
Eddie,
guy's a
like,
bad man.
I told Eddie some of the projects he was on. And it was shocking to me, to be honest. This has been one of my favorite drummers for a long time. bro, it sounded like it made its way around like a damn boomerang. So let's see here. I've been into him for a long time, and a lot of you that are my age or slightly older will probably know the name, but I didn't know all of who he played with. So here we go. Short list. This is about half. Weather Report. Nice. Love it. David Bowie. Now we jump over to the Foo Fighters. Then we come over to a little known artist named Sting. We hit a Madonna on the left. We head over to Dire Straits. Brian Ferry, Journey, Kate Bush, George Benson, Miles Davis, Daft Punk, Mariah Carey, the Pussycat Dolls, David Lee Roth, and Celine Dion. Damn. She's not listening. That's not a real name. All right. So this cat has some serious like credits. Can you imagine? Like, there must be a room in his house where he's like, I have a few platinum albums. Yeah. And then you open it and you're like, oh my God, you're on every album. Anyone know who I might be talking about? Just raise your hand if you think you have a guest. My man. Did you have it too?
Wow.
Wow. Well done. Well done.
You should be here.
I wish this was like a real drum event where we had like the giveaways and then we do a raffle, but we don't. So I'll just give you both a high five later. Omar Hakim is the man we're speaking of. So I think Omar came to my attention probably in my teen, you know, at the time drum magazines were my only way to get information about musicians, and you'd buy CDs or, since I'm 1,000 years old, tapes and albums. But back in the day, there was information, and that information was as valuable to us as musicians as the music itself. I wanted to know, where did you track this? Who was the producer? Who mixed it? They would even tell you, like, you know, what drums were used on what tracks and everything. And Omar, to me, was the guy that showed up with Sting. He was the first person to play with Sting after Stuart Copeland. And that was like, oh my gosh, like if you know that the Police kind of broke up over Stewart and Sting, there's no way Sting didn't audition 9,000 drummers to be like, who will piss Stewart off the most? I want the baddest moho on the planet. And so I was like, who's this cat? And then, you know, I think I'm not like a Stingologist, but was it Bring on the Night? Is that Sting's first solo album, I think? Thanks, guys. Appreciate the help.
Yep. Big Sting fans in the
big
house.
Big Sting fans, right on. I never thought Turnstile would be more popular than Sting in a room, but hey, here we go.
I love it.
So that was kind of like this wake-up call of like, oh, this cat must be real if Sting has chosen him. And then he ended up on one of my favorite artist albums, an artist named Bobby McFerrin. And most of you probably know Bobby from Don't Worry, Be Happy, but he's truly one of the greatest musicians to ever live. he's a brilliant composer, and he made these brilliant fusion records in the late 90s and early 2000s, one with Will Kennedy on drums, and basically the Yellow Jackets were the band for the album, and then another one where he had some guest artists, Vinny Cagliuta was on it, and Omar was on one of the tracks. So this is one of the tracks. What's the name of this?
Field. Here we go. Fertile Field.
Dan Fang. Here we go. All right. Fertile Field.
I just want to buy some hot rods now, mate.
Oh my god! I mean, I don't even know what Vic Firth calls them, but I'll buy some the bundly brushes of doom. So wow. That's Omar, and you know that was probably one of my. It's weird, my love for fusion and whatever you want to call advanced music. It doesn't go in the right timeline. Like I didn't find out about Chick Corea till way, way late in my life. I had to go back. And so that was one of my introductions to fusion drumming. And up until that point, I always learned beats. Like every song had a beat. And if I was patient enough, I could write it out. And I'd write out the hi-hat part. And maybe it would be 2 bars or maybe even 4 bars. But eventually it would loop. And then I'd write out the snare part underneath that. And then I'd write out the kick part underneath that. And then I had the thing and I could learn it. And then I was like 14 when that came out. And I was, you know, probably about 3 minutes into the track. And I'm like, yeah, he still hasn't repeated anything. I can't write anything. Like, I think he's just hitting shit. You know, like, excuse me. I think he's just hitting stuff.
Hey! There we go. A round of applause.
I marked it down. I know where to take it out. It's fine. I think he's just hitting stuff, you know. And I was like, this is insane. And then taking that stuff to my drum teachers, taking that to my bandmates in high school and being, and they're like, oh, man. You should definitely check out this cat, Vinny Cagliuta and Dave Weckl and all these people who I had seen, you know, but I just didn't know what they did. I didn't know who they were. And so Omar was really kind of it changed my life because all of a sudden I became obsessed with that. And I still did the rock thing and I would show that to my bandmates and they're like, can you turn this off? And I was like, okay, totally. And then for the rest of my life in, you know, touring, I was just hiding. I'd put on headphones and listen to that. And I just had to like do this the whole time. So they thought, you know, and they're like, what are you listening to? I'm like, the new Mushroom Head. They're like, all right, yeah. But it was like, cookie, cookie. You know, I was like, oh, yeah.
So that's all improv then?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is in that there's a vibe holding it together.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird. Like, how is that not overplaying? It's you do that in the wrong gig and everyone says, oh, you'd get fired for that. And that statement drives, there's nothing that.
That's such a YouTube comment.
It's such a YouTube comment. And I'm like, you'd get fired for that in what situation? Because in a fusion gig, you'd get fired for this. So it's the situation that determines it. drumming will never get you fired. Choices get you fired. You make the wrong choice in the wrong situation, in the wrong moment, that gets you fired. If you don't like your gig, do that on the pop gig. You'll get out of it right away. They'll give you the boot and you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you liked that stuff. And then you're gone. You don't have to worry about it. But to me, it's not overplaying because it fits the tone of the music beautifully. And he stays out of the way. He picked his spot. Vocals dropped out. And he was like, dropped the hammer. And then the vocals came back in. He was like, I got you. And so, yeah, absolutely love Omar Hakim. So hopefully to those of you at home listening, now you've been introduced to Connor Rain, Ben Johnston, Dan Fang, and Omar Hakim.
Here we go. A couple of legends right there, mate.
Yeah, man. All right, let's get into some questions. Sound like I'm on a damn podcast. Does anyone have any questions? If you do, just raise your hand. I'll call you out, and then I'll try, or one of us will try our best to repeat it for the listeners at home. Sure, sure. So just to repeat the question, he's just asking about the depths of toms, especially in how it relates to floor toms. So we have what are called square sizes, where the diameter of the drum matches the depth of the drum. So that'd be a 14 by 14 or a 16 by 16. And then for a while, fast toms got very popular. So then the 14 got shortened down to a 14 by 12 or a 16 by 14. Do you have any thoughts on this?
New.
Sweet. So
thanks for that one, Scotty. Fuck's sake.
Really just right down the middle. Yeah. Straight for Eddie.
I could tell what you were thinking. Eddie's in a different world right now. Eddie's in a... This was like the first episode of this podcast we ever did. Well, we did like three of them.
That we didn't publish.
And then it was all about gear. And Amber told me last night, because I spoke about that, she was like, yeah. Mike came home and just said, yeah, Eddie really doesn't know that much about drums. You know, it's just not his thing.
She's like, I thought he was a professional drummer. I'm like, no, he's like one of the best. He's really good. I was like, I just don't think he ever was there when they set it up. I think he's had a lot of techs. I don't think he's ever changed a head. But yeah, the first episode was pretty awesome because I was like, well, let's just get into bearing edges. And he's like, yeah.
But talk about blagging it and an imposter syndrome and flipping out. I was like, yeah, big time. Yeah. Just agreeing the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we'd already branded it Drum with Mike and Eddie. So we're like, well, we'll keep that, but let's talk about the things that really matter to us. But so with the floor toms in general, you have a batter head and a resonant head. The reso head, it's in the title. It resonates. Well, what happens is a lot of times as you get that resonant head further and further away from the batter head, the sound doesn't have a chance to make it there and it doesn't resonate as much. So short stack floor toms, a lot of times they'll ring forever, and that's because that bottom head is a little bit closer. So when you get to a 14 by 14, even though it looks like a tube, it actually does its job and gets out of the way. It goes like, doom, gone. So it dissipates really fast. And 14 by 14, 16 by 16, they work much better on legs. But some people don't want to have their floor toms on legs. Well, those drums are really heavy. So if you put them on a stand or a rack, they fall over a lot of times, or they put too much pressure on the mount. So by shortening it, you make a lighter drum. It works better on a mounting system. They're not better or worse. It's just knowing why would you have one over the other. So, you know, when you get really shallow, like say a 10 by 7, then you're having very short resonance again because it's almost like the sound doesn't have enough time to do its job and resonate the head. But when it comes to like, if you want a great punchy floor tom, 16 by 16 is the way to go because it just, you hit it, it opens up and then it shuts itself back down. Where if you went 16 by 14 or maybe 16 by 12, that's when the sound guy always goes, hey, can you do something about that floor tom? Because it feeds back the whole PA. It won't ever stop. And so literally what you do is you grab one of these and you do things and you just keep hitting it until he goes, that's better. And you're like, cool, but you don't know what you did. You're like, I just turned the knobs. Like, I don't know. So yeah. So hope that helps, man.
That's literally what I have, the 14 by 12 or
16. Yeah. And they'll ring forever, man.
Yeah.
And also the legs will actually take a lot of the resonance through them and put them straight into the ground. So that kind of kills the drum too. Where when you get it off of a stand, it's just free floating. So it can ring forever. It's very weird that the drumming industry marketed to all of us so hard. This has the most resonance in our new independent sustain system. And then as soon as we get the drums, we put crap all over them to shut it down. It's like, why don't they make a drum that's like, this thing doesn't ring at all. It's like, beautiful. Then I can just have drum heads and I don't have to have a bunch of gummy bears. I'm getting hot. I'm sorry. I just hate, like, my OCD can't handle a bunch of freaking gummy bears stuck to my drums, and then it gets, like, lint on it, and then... Anyways, any other questions? Just raise your hand. Yeah, brother.
Did you tell him about the cotton ball trick?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just all of my drums at the studio have cotton balls in them. So, Seb, put some cotton balls in your drum. It helps. For a 14 by 12 or a 16 by 12, like 100. I just dumped the whole bag in there.
As many balls as you like, mate.
Yeah. Unfortunately, what sucks is, you know, you do have to season to taste, but then when it doesn't work, you have to take off the head and do it again. I would say in my floor tom, I have probably like 10. Yeah, so you just hit the drum. It's just basically a homemade compressor. They jump up in the air, and then they land, and they shut the resonance down.
Cool, man.
Yeah,
man. You got time on your hands to go one by one and poke
them
through the
net
hole.
My man. If you're patient like my man, then you're set.
I think I am, man.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. Dave.
You talk about dudes that you admire on social media that don't really post a whole lot. But mm-hmm. I wonder, can they only really get away with that because they're already like well established? Exactly.
It's a tough one. I think, yeah, so the question was drummers who... are amazing and in big bands, but they don't post on social media. Can they get? Is that why they can get away with it? Because they're in big bands. And it is a tough one, mate. I do think that. And for me personally, mate, I'm going down the route of I can't. The more time goes on, the less I can be bothered with social media. But it is just the way the world is. And it's without social media, this podcast wouldn't exist and this event wouldn't have happened. Really, to some extent. So it is balancing the line of just like, okay, cool, how much do you put out and what content do you put out, you know? And I think like those artists and those drummers, they're clever about how they post. What they post is art to a certain extent, you know? It's not just giving away free things for engagement or following the algorithm. They're just posting because they want to post videos of them playing. And that's, it's a tough one, man. It is a tough one because... You know, it was the opposite for me. Like I was in a kind of big band, but no one knew me as a drummer. So I had to post those videos. You know, I was like, I don't want to just be a band guy. I want to be like a drummer and drummers know that I can play other stuff. And, you know, I take the drum seriously. So it was the opposite for me, but it is a tough one. It is a tough one. You know, the whole, like, I don't give an F attitude is cool, but then, if you want to make it a career, then you've got to balance that line, yeah, you know, which is hard to do.
It's also, we're in a weird time where, I mean, if you think about where you're at with social media right now, you post once a day minimum, if not more, for Paragon. Yeah. So when it's a company, we don't feel bad about posting. We don't feel like we're bothering anybody. When it's ourselves personally, you know, it's like, man, I don't know if I'm worthy of even showing up in your feed. I don't know if you want to see this from me. Like, do I really want to compete with everybody? Do I really want to even take on the personal hit of it not doing well? Did well 2 weeks ago. Why is it not doing now? Because I don't have a career anymore. Did I start to suck? Like, what's going on? And then if I was just showing off a product like a pair of shoes, there's no personal attachment. Doesn't do well. Maybe it was the algorithm. But for some weird reason, when it doesn't do well and it's a personal post about my drumming or whatever, it hurts. It really hurts. And I think it's just as unhealthy for it to make me happy that it did well. It's like, God, I just don't want to deal with that. You know. So I think we go through that quite a bit, and that's a pretty normal thing. But unfortunately, right now, there's so much of the things that we have as artists that we wouldn't have without social media. Mm. I think it is time, though, for... you know, I know Kyle's back there, but Kyle has made, the owner of Sociology, has made some amazing posts lately telling other coffee shop owners and creators to stop bitching about the algorithm. No one forced you to get on this platform. This platform was made. It's a tool, and stop bitching. Like, make great content. I can't tell you how many posts this guy does a day, but it's not to do anything other than he loves it. He loves posting. So he loves making little TikTok things, and it's just his thing. He's not trying to do anything other than, I honestly, I'm like, when do you have the time to do this, bro? I see you behind the counter all the time. But he's always got his phone with him. So I think you just have to like it. If you're going to do it, you can't do it like it's a chore, because then you'll never be very good at it. But it is a tough thing. The other thing is you can also try to achieve something on a local level. You know, we have some cats here in town that don't even have social media accounts, but they are legends. And, you know, if somebody said, you know, like, hey, I need a drummer, I would probably be like 40th on the list in Sacramento. I mean, the first call would be Bruce Spencer. Then you're going to go down, not down, but then might be Tim Metz. There's all these cats that don't, I mean, they have social media, but they couldn't care less about it. But they are the first call in this town. And so maybe that's a different route where it's like, man, I like shaking people's hands. I like going to shows. I like meeting people. Don't worry about social media. Be a great networker in your local town and make your money that way, you know? So
sometimes in music, there's this picture. I don't know who it's by. It's like a drawing. And it's like four faces. And I think I said this on an episode before. In the bottom right-hand corner, it's like... The guy's got a massive brain and he's miserable. And in the next picture, the brain gets smaller and he's not miserable, but he's not happy. And then in the next picture, his brain's even smaller and he's starting to smile. And then in the first picture, his brain's like tiny and he's got a massive smile. And I honestly think that image works so well with music. Sometimes you just got to fucking stop thinking, mate. Like, just don't think, put it out there. And that's you're gonna be happier, mate. And if things happen, if things come from it, then it's just a bonus. And I think that's the approach I try to take now from social media. I'm just like, well, I'm feeling a certain way, I'm gonna capture it. If I capture it, cool, I'll put it out. If not, no worries, you know? Like, I think that's the best way to be, man. Sometimes just shut off. It's easier said than done, but I think if you're conscious of that, record a video, cool, I'll put it up, switch off, just forget about it.
Yeah, man. Scotty, what's the intro to the podcast? His part.
They like you. I like you. You don't know anything.
Yeah, okay. You know what? Scotty. Right.
My daddy's got to be mine now.
Yeah. Okay. Yo, be like you. Play like you. Yo, what up, dog? Hey, yo. Hey! Yo. Scotty, you've got to come and like record it, yeah. So we could just chuck it in an episode and see if anyone notices. Do you know what I mean? You won't get any PRS or royalties, but yeah. You know what I mean. But yeah, it's true, man. It's we just care about this instrument, mate, and we really care about what other drummers think of us. No matter if you try to tell yourself you don't, you know, when you're in this room, and you come up here, you want to play good. You want to walk away thinking, I hope no one thought I was shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's you know, and the reality is like. No one's thinking about anything but themselves.
Right.
And it's a tough instrument. There's a reason why, like, you've probably got a million question marks in your brain before you do anything on the kit. It's because you care emotionally more than probably any other instrument. And I think it's just trying to shut down those questions and just have fun and not think about it, mate. When I think about when I first started using social media more, mate, I was just like, I never thought of anything. Didn't think of any algorithm. Didn't think of likes. Didn't think of, yeah, anything whatsoever. And it's the same with bands. It's the same with artists, designers, like artists who make art, who make music, who make films. They're not, the other business stuff is done by someone else. Like, just get down and create. And for us, unfortunately, we're everything. We're the business. Yeah. We're the social media guy or girl. We are the artist. We're the engineer. We're everything. Videographer. So it is hard to stop those questions, but I think if you can, that's the win. Just remember that picture, tiny brain. Do you know what I mean? Big smile.
Awesome. Yeah, brother.
When COVID hit, my life kind of required a reboot. You guys have both had reboots in your life. You talk about Phil and you talk about Travis. There's times when they had to reboot when they didn't want to.
Sure.
What are you thinking about your future reboots? What's going to happen to you when you can't drum or you can't podcast or you can't talk to each other? It's going to happen in your future if you're making yourself resilient today.
It's a good question. I mean, well, one, if I can't talk to him, there's no reason to live. So I'll figure something out.
Scotty can sort of pretend he's
Yeah, made. Yeah, I'll just call Scotty. Play like you, play like you,
play like you.
So yeah, probably in about a month, you guys will be hearing on the podcast about what I'm setting up for my 60s and 70s, and I'm starting it now. I just want it to be actualized, but it's been in the works. Eddie knows all about it. It's not taking me out of the drum industry at all. It's actually, it's been on my mind for quite a few years, and I didn't want to do it until I was at the peak of being in love with the instrument and with teaching the instrument, because it is something that potentially could pull me out of the industry if it went well, if I wasn't happy with the drums. And I've never been more happy about being a drummer and being a teacher than I am right now. This last year of camps that you were a part of, it was the most special year I've ever taught. And I've taught now 12 years of drum camps, you know, and this year was just something different. And the world is different post COVID. People appreciate certain things a little bit more. And it's funny, like there's a lot of, you know, a lot of cynicism in this world, but every once in a while, seeing what we almost lost, you know, the world has also gotten more beautiful when people are willing to take advantage of it and willing to drop their guard and willing to not try to be too cool. And I'm just really happy with the drums right now. So there's that. But I think the other thing is so many of those reboots came out of nowhere, and I've just proven to myself, and I you know, I don't want to speak for Eddie, but I know some of his reboots. I've just proven to myself that like, it'll always work out. Like, I have, you know, I don't know. I think because also we came from like band guy days. So a one bedroom apartment with single pane glass, beat up Honda Civic, and maybe some health insurance on the months I can afford it. That's the life, man. Like, that was my bar back in the day. If I can play drums for the rest of my life and have that, we're good to go. Everything else is a cherry on top. And, you know, my wife Amber knew when we got married, you let her know, like, I'm a drummer. So basically what happens for my entire life is I have just good months, and then it's just a huge, like, scary moment of like no money coming in. And then just like something happens. Someone calls and says, you've got this thing and it pays this. And then it's like, oh, we're living on top of the world. And it just goes like this. And so emotionally, you just have to even it out and be like, I just want to play drums, you know?
That's why you cry after a 3-day drum camp.
Yeah.
It's true. It's mental.
We got tears out of Brother Eddie this time. Well,
I was hot last night.
Steven had a little, he had some, we got him some tissue.
Yeah.
Yep.
But we that's what we were talking about at the meal yesterday, mate. Like, the drums are weird. Music's weird. And like, you know, I'm 32 now. I still don't know what the fuck I'm doing in life. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, no one does when you're a musician. And I think you kind of love that in a way. Do you know what I mean? And for me personally, I know Mike's the same actually, to be honest, but the drums and being a musician teaches you so much. Like I just said, answering the other question, man, like, you're the video guy, you're the social media guy, you're your own marketing team, you're everything. And the drums have taught me and Mike and probably everyone else in the room, like, other things that can help in life. And if the drums take a backseat for a certain period of time, then they're not really taking a backseat, because like, it's helped you do this other thing.
Yeah.
And then they'll come back in. So the drums are weird, mate. Drums are weird, but like, you never really know. Like, last year, I had loads of stuff booked in and it didn't happen. But then next year, it's up here, and it comes down, and it comes up. But it's part of doing it. And I think you kind of naturally love that, and it keeps it exciting. But yeah, the drums, whenever you think the drums are like, oh, damn, the drums, I don't know what's going on. I don't know where I'm going to go in life. They're the reason why you do the next thing, and that's why it's successful. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, I think all of us, hopefully, as we start to bring this episode to a close, all of us not only have to be as resilient as possible, but we also need to have a few people in our lives to lean on when we just don't have the strength to be resilient. You know, I mean, that's how we became friends in the first place. You know, Eddie didn't ask me to make his business grow. He didn't ask me how to get more students, which would have meant that a friendship would have never formed in the first place. I'd be like, why would you call me for that? We have the same business. But instead he called me to be like, how do you feel when you lose a student? I'm struggling emotionally dealing with the loss of a student, because I feel like maybe it was something I did. That's how we became friends. And honestly, there's just so much that we go through day to day with each other that has nothing to do with the drums. It's just the emotional stuff, you know? And so having a room like this where it's like, most of you drove here, there is no reason after tonight you shouldn't have some lifelong drum bros where it's like, dude, let's just get together. You're a 45-minute drive from my house. I'll come over. I'll bring a kick and a snare. Let's jam. And then who knows what happens? Maybe a great friendship comes out of it. But, you know, and I mean, most of us have met, or I've met most of you before. Now you've met Eddie. Like, we can rely on each other to be like, man, I'm just going through some stuff, you know, because it just never really changes. That's why we talk so much about the tide going in and out. That part never changes. I never make it more than a year of being stoked on the drums. And that's why I have to take advantage of the tide being in, because I know I'm only a few days away from it going out and I can't recapture it. I don't know why I don't want to practice. I don't know why I don't care about getting better. I don't know about you, but I'm experiencing that with social media now.
Yeah,
there's definitely moments where I get kind of stoked to make content and make new videos, and something got triggered. And then there's times where I'm like, it's not that I'm scared or nervous. It's like, I don't know. I just don't care. I don't want to do anything if I don't care about it. That's one thing that I'm not a fan of. So I think, you know, we have a great network here already. I mean, this is, you know, 30 drummers that live somewhere near here, except for Scotty. Based off the accent, I'm assuming it's not California.
I don't see where you get that from, man.
I don't know either, man. Man, I can't tell you what. So we got a good family here, and drummers will always be there for you. I think that this instrument does have a thing that's special to it, where you can reach out to a drummer and say, man, I'm going through some stuff, and we just kind of all get it. You know, it's like, yeah, man, it's a tough instrument, and yeah.
It happens on every level as well, man.
Oh,
that's the beautiful thing. Like, one of my mates back home plays for, like, a huge artist, like Lewis Capaldi. You know who Lewis Capaldi is? Like, had one of the biggest songs of last year. Matt, I said huge. Everyone went,
It's pretty big where you live.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's, like, number one everywhere. And he's played for the 1975. He's recorded for, like, some of the biggest artists in the world. And in lockdown, he was like, I just don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. Do I even enjoy touring anymore now I've been home? Do I want to go back out? And now he's back out. He's like, sweet, my life makes sense. But like I said, man, it's a weird one. It's weird. Like I said, man, that's why you cry at a drum camp. It's just like, it doesn't make sense, but it does in a weird way, you know?
Yeah. That's why it's also great to have something like this where, just what he said, it doesn't make sense, but it kind of does to everyone in this room. And that's just a cool thing. It bonds us forever. You know, we have said for a very long time, if you own Styx, you're family. And that's just because, honestly, even if you're only 3 weeks deep into this instrument, I know exactly what you feel like. I remember exactly what it was like to learn my first groove where the kick went in between the hi-hats, and it doesn't go in between the hi-hats because your right hand just follows it. And you're like, oh my God, you just go down. Oh, and they're like, what? So whoever's going through that, it's like, yeah, we all remember that. Yeah, it's the worst. We couldn't go gagoom. We always went da-doom, you know? And so even when you see a drummer that, quote unquote, isn't very good, it's like, but they're not very good. They're you 25 years ago. And that's, to most drummers, instead of us talking smack about them, it's like, oh man, I remember exactly what my body felt like when I was at that person's level. And that's what we all need to remember. And if we could take that into life, it's going to be a little bit better too, you know? So that got deep more than I wanted it to.
Yeah, man. Love it. Any more questions quick?
We do have to wrap it up. Yeah, this will be a quick one.
Well, I guess quick. This is, for the majority of us, our getaway. It's your business. I mean, I'm a termite inspector. I crawl in your houses all day. This is what I come to go, okay, forget about termite inspector. What's your guys' getaway?
Oh, nice.
Man, that's a great question. Like sneakers, clothing.
No, that's business for you.
Yeah, it is.
Oh wow.
But yeah. Wow. He listens. He listens. Flipping out.
We'll be all right. Still recording.
I don't know, mate. It's true, like what? Like sneakers and drums. And that's why it's just yin and yang. It's like when I'm feeling a good way about this, I do that, and vice versa. So yeah. Yeah.
I gotta say though, I would say just from being your friend for so long, his vacation from reality really is style. He really loves like people that put so much into details that no one will ever see. He loves things that make you feel a certain way rather than like it's so obvious what happened. You know, I remember when he would send me stuff when we first started becoming friends, he's like, man, I love this guy's Instagram page. And it'd be like some famous designer. And I would look at it and just think, those are camera phone pictures with flash on. That's terrible. That's the worst thing you could ever do with like like an iPhone 7. Like, it's not meant for that. And I'm like, this guy has 2 million followers and he's doing camera phone pictures with flash on in broad daylight. Like, this is terrible. And like, Eddie saw it right away and he's like, yeah, but it's awesome, man. And I was like, okay, I guess. And then all of a sudden I see Kanye West doing the same thing and I see everybody else doing the same thing. I'm like, man, Eddie caught that like 6 months before it became a thing. And he's done that with a lot of things. So I think like that's his getaway, is like he loves that stuff, you know? And
that's true.
You should have seen him trying to lace up this brand new pair of Nikes yesterday. Okay, it was no doubt 45 minutes that he was on my couch trying to lace up this pair of shoes. And I was like, dog, this is what you do for, they go like this. And he was like, no, no, no. And he literally goes right over, right over, right. He takes them all out again. And I'm like, dog, just lace them up. Who cares? Throw some gaff tape across the front of them. Who gives a crap?
And then didn't wear them.
Yeah. And then he put them on and he goes, it's not going to work with these trousers. It's like, what are trousers?
Yeah, it's true, man.
But yeah, so like that, I think that's, you know, his thing.
It's true. Yeah, it's true.
You know, I would say for me, man, it's such a tough thing. I mean, I don't have anything frivolous, I guess. I would say my dogs, honestly. Like, you know, and when I say my dogs, my wife is one of my dogs. And no, I mean it like it is this pack of ride or die. She's my ride or die, you know, like, I love me some Eddie Thrower, but you know, Amber is the person I can spend 24/7 with. 24/7. It never stops. And I love it. And our dogs are part of that because we chose very specifically not to have children. So we put everything we have into those pups. And yeah, there's nothing I can think of. There's no clinic. There's no drum festival, podcast. There's nothing I can think of that makes me more happy than coming home and then just getting on the couch with my wife and our two dogs. And we fight over which one we get to snuggle with. Like, I'm taking the boy. And she's like, the boy's mine. And like, that's heaven for me. And I hope that I have a career that allows me to always be able to do that. And we recognize very much so how much what you said rings true to so many drummers. So many drummers do this because life is not easy. And this is the thing that gets them through life. And honestly, this is what got us through high school. Getting your ass kicked, getting dumped, getting made fun of, being bullied. It's like, yeah, well, I go home, I put on my headphones to Omar Hakim and, you know, Bobby McFerrin, and I have the time of my life.
That was a beautiful answer, Matt. Can I say mine again?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
My wife and my son. Yeah. I said shoes.
Fucking hell.
I'm not gonna let her listen to this one. I said fucking shoes, mate.
I was gonna say cameras, but then when you went shoes, I was like, I'll just go deep.
You did me dirty there, mate. You did me dirty there.
All right, everybody. So for everyone that's listening at home, thank you guys. I know that a lot of times these live podcasts can be a little weird to listen to in your car or on a job, but we hope you had an amazing time listening. And next week we'll be back to our normal podcast. But for now, we got to get out of here. So we didn't even mention it, but this is episode 100.
Good guy, mate.
Episode 100. Yeah. It's in the can. Double gun.
Double gun.
In the can.